Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Killett, your host, wearing my flannel shirt because it's time for Flannel Panel. We haven't done it in a while. Flannel Panel is when I get to talk with really smart people about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. And so maybe this is your first time listening to Catholic Answers. Maybe this is your first time listening to whatever radio station you're listening to right now because you're traveling, you're on the road. You're one of the, I think I saw on the news today, 500 billion people are traveling for Thanksgiving today. 500 billion. I think that's it. Maybe it was a trillion. I think a trillion people. Chris is giving me
I think
a look.
That was the national debt. I think that was,
that's how much it's going up on Thanksgiving.
A day, yeah.
Lots of people traveling. So if you're finding us, just if you want to know who we are, Catholic Answers, you can find us at Catholic.com. Flannel Panel, we try to do it monthly, which means we get to it about every 6 months or something. I don't know. We're just not good at scheduling this.
People ask me, when I'm out around talking or I know, visiting the support, when's the next Flannel Panel?
I don't think Darren likes it because he doesn't schedule it. Chris Check is president of Catholic Answers, one of the members of Flannel Panel. Hello, Chris Check.
Cy, thanks for having me. Thanks for keeping me on the Flannel Panel.
I can't vote you off.
No,
I don't have that power.
Actually, I don't know.
Do you think I have that power?
Well, I don't know. The TV shows, they sort of change casts from time to time.
Yeah. Do The View change? I don't know. I think of us as like The View, but... But if flannel shirts
are
you, on,
that's, are you that's really going to sell people who are driving and listening for the first time. Like, oh, yeah. I know what I need more of The View.
Are you Whoopi Goldberg?
Whoopi. Her name is not Whoopi.
What is it?
Whoopi.
Okay, excuse me.
Whoopi is so different.
Is it spelled W-H-O-O-P-I?
Yes.
That's also, Whoopi.
Also joining us, Joe Heschmeyer, apologist here at Catholic Answers, author of a bunch of books, including The Eucharist is Really Jesus, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Joe Heschmeyer, welcome.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Do you know what is extraordinary about this flannel panel today? Do you know? Just look at us, Joe. What's extraordinary?
Yes, we're all wearing flannel.
We all remembered.
Sounds like an obvious prerequisite for something called the flannel panel. But it's a feat. It's an accomplishment.
I didn't remember. No matter how this goes
from here on out, the first minute was all right.
Yeah, the first minute, we nobody showed up on screen with no flannel on. I have to tell you guys, it's been so long since we've done a flannel panel, and I want to confess, we are going to get to the news of the world from a Catholic perspective momentarily. Part of the reason that we haven't done a flannel panel is I think you'll remember the last time we did it, we were on a cruise ship, the Catholic Answers cruise, and we recorded it there. And I couldn't play that. It was unusable.
I often find that to be the truth about these flannel panels.
No, they're almost all usable. That one was unusable. We couldn't use it.
And was it because of that stuff that Joe said?
It was not. I love confessing to you guys the stuff I do. I don't know
why. I didn't push record.
No, I pushed record.
That was like I was at the top of my game.
I pushed record on both of your microphones, but my microphone, I never pushed record on.
It sounds like it still might be usable.
No, we tried. We tried everything, and it's just not.
Are you sure AI? We couldn't have AI.
Do you know, Darren even tried that. He tried because sometimes AI can do that. It can find the really faint background noise and pull it up. But we couldn't do it.
I think it would have been really funny to have you re-record your part, but obviously,
yes,
like not in the same. Like,
excellent point, different. Joe. You, what do you think about fill in the blank?
That was a great. That was like I think that may have been our best one.
Yeah, it was. Now it's just lost to history. Yeah. The greatest episode of Flannel Panel that we ever did,
like the SpongeBob lost episode.
Is there a SpongeBob lost episode? I did not know that.
There was.
The people to share that information, I did not know. You would not have been at the top of that list. I didn't know you knew who SpongeBob was.
I had four sons.
Yeah,
at the peak of SpongeBob.
You have four sons and know very little about popular. If I said, What's the name of a popular social media platform?
And I would say SpongeBob.
No, that's not social media. Social media is a completely different thing.
Oh, I know. Instapin.
There we go. There we go. Yeah, he's up on SpongeBob, but he doesn't have any idea what TikTok is. If you showed him TikTok, he wouldn't know what that was. All right, I'm not going to give out the phone number because we got news to get to. We got to get the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. And the genius of SpongeBob is the shape of his pants, I think. That's what sells the whole thing.
Well, if they weren't square, you would have a really hard time calling him SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yes.
I like the SpongeBob song, It's Christmas, Don't Be a Jerk.
That is a good song. It's I know SpongeBob has
it's Christmas, don't be a jerk. All right, that's the best advice.
Our first story is actually about social media, and it comes to us from Australia, one of our favorite places, Australia.
You've been
several times, and I absolutely love Australia. Food is better in Australia. I don't know why. That's true. Food is better in Australia. I do not know why, but it's better there. I think it's the preservatives that they don't put in or something. But I have a particular love for Australia today because they are doing the thing the whole world should have done at the beginning of this, at the very beginning of this. Today, they were voted on it in the lower house, and now it'll go to the upper house. I think it's called the Senate in Australia. They are going to ban the use of social media by anyone under 16 years of age. If you're, I think, 16 or under, or under 16, I'm not sure which one it is, no social media for you. No social media
for you. How does this manifest itself? You can't have a social media account?
Yeah, you can't have a social media account. And they will fine the companies if they make social media available to these children.
It's interesting it sort of reminds me of, going after the tobacco companies for selling to minors or something like that. It's probably, and frankly, it's much more harmful.
Which one's more harmful, do you think? Oh, yeah, social media is way more harmful.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, I don't think this
I'm not recommending your teenage children pick up cigarettes. Let's just be clear.
No, but the social media is soul destroying.
It's
horrific. So anyway, how popular do you think this is in Australia? What percentage of people support the ban in Australia, according to a recent YouGov survey?
Of 16-year-olds and under?
Yeah. Yeah. No, what percentage?
Are you asking teenagers or are you asking grown-ups?
No, of all Australians.
I'm going to say 75% think this is a good idea.
Chris?
I was going to say that high, but more than half.
It's 77%, so even higher than 75.
Did Joe look this up?
Wow. No, he did not. I could tell by the look on his face. Joe's, as always, Joe is completely unprepared for this show, so that, I am sure he did not look
up. And I have that in common. Yeah.
I do want to read you, not everyone supports it, and of course, American media treats it as if it is, generally speaking, as if it is some kind of oppression of the young, that we're going to ban them from social media in Australia, because I don't know what's the matter with American media, but so Reuters has...
Well, they lose money.
How are kids going to get anxiety and depression if they don't have social media?
Poor self-esteem.
Well, here's the thing is, I think they still will because this is not a ban on pornography, which there should be a ban on pornography.
And it'd be very easy to do.
Like that's supposed to be the most shocking thing to say. Just ask people, do you think there should be a ban on pornography on the internet? Most people will say yes, because we all know what's happening. Children are being infected with this at a very, very young age, and it's destroying them. It's shattering them. It is making
them... It's worse than COVID.
It's so much worse than COVID. It's terrifying them. It's... And doing all the other damage that you would think pornography would do. So I wish Australia would do that, but I'm giving them credit on this one. 77% of them, 7% of the Australians don't want it. But I do want to read, of course, Reuters listed all the ways that all the people who oppose this, Reuters taking the side of the 23%. But I want to read you... they have a thing called the Human Rights Commission in Australia. And if I hear the words Human Rights Commission anywhere, I immediately think of the Soviet Union. I immediately think, oh, this is a Soviet thing. This is just an import from the Soviet Union. I don't know why I am so untrusting about because I do think that evil things are often given lovely, beautiful names. So if you're on a human rights commission anywhere in the world and I meet you, immediately I'm going to think you're a Soviet. That's my...
or a Maoist.
Yeah, you might be a Maoist. This is what the Human Rights Commission, Australian Human Rights Commission, which Reuters says is an independent statutory authority. What does that mean? What does that even mean, Reuters? They're trying to fluff them up as if they're somehow important. They opposed the ban, saying it violated children's rights to self-expression and to participate in society. So before social media, children could not express themselves or participate in society, apparently, because it's now a human right that you get on Facebook at 9 years old.
Well, there you go. That, I mean, it does seem, first of all, I want to understand more of the Human Rights Commission's conception of human rights, but that's probably too deep of a rabbit hole of like, where are these rights coming from? And, you know, if they're God-given, did God give us a right to Facebook? What day of creation was that even? I don't even know. Oh. You know, like where yes. is the conception of rights coming
on
from?
On the sixth day. It was actually on the sixth day.
Yes.
God said, let there be Facebook and let the kids look at it.
Yeah.
Leave them kids alone. I believe he
it
said,
might have been
hey,
MySpace
teacher.
Back then. I think Eden was leave kind them of kids MySpace alone. Era.
Yeah, it was MySpace at the beginning. No, I actually looked up the Australian Human Rights Commission because I was so taken with that completely Soviet idea. And this is where they don't mention God at all. They don't. There is, but I don't. That's Australia. I don't think that's shocking. I mean, I don't. I think like much of the West, they gave up on God a long time ago. But human rights are based on the principles of dignity, equality, and mutual respect, which are shared across cultures, religions, and philosophies.
See, now to me, that sounds like it comes out of revolutionary France.
Yeah, it's just revolutionary. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, right.
Liberty,
that's,
equality, fraternity.
Right. And that, yeah, that's exactly what that is. And I think the Aztecs would be amazed to find out that dignity, equality, and mutual respect are shared across cultures, religions, and philosophies. But there you have it. The Australians apparently have never heard of the Aztecs.
I think this is great news for girls age 8 to 16 who are the biggest victims of this particular world of social media. What I am curious about is what is it in the Australian character that is bringing this to the fore? Down under, as it were. This is striking to me. They don't strike me as a reactionary people, the Australians.
No, but I do wonder a couple things about it. One,
it's all the work of our friend there with Perugia. Yeah.
Charbel.
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 It's all Charbel
Perugia,
race.
Australia. Yeah.
Yeah. He's having quite an effect.
Good work, Charbel.
Yeah.
But I would say this. I wonder if some of this is that none of these companies, the Facebooks, the Googles, the TikToks, are Australian companies. Do you see what I'm saying?
That they're, yes. They don't have the same financial ties.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's probably that.
That doesn't
also the case that Australia is a lot less libertarian than America is.
It did tell
and
me.
So that kind of strand, I learned recently that only two countries in the world allow direct-to-consumer advertising of pharmaceutical drugs, and it's the U.S. and New Zealand. And New Zealand is kind of like Australia's wilder cousin, you know? But the rest of the Anglosphere takes a much more restrictive view on who and what you're advertising and selling, which, I mean, there's pros and cons to that, but I think if you come from that more regulatory mindset, then asking, well, is Facebook doing anything good here? And the answer is no. Well, I mean, I say Facebook, TikTok, more realistically. Then there should be a good move to ban it. In the U.S., I mean, Jonathan Haidt's book, The Anxious Generation, was a New York Times bestseller. And in it, he basically argues, don't give your kids smartphones. But the problem is that you have kind of a collective action or coordination problem. No parent wants to be, you know, the weirdos who've got the one kid who doesn't know when the party is because all of their friends have smartphones and they don't. And I mean, you could actually solve that pretty well with the flip phone, but nevertheless, like everyone's afraid of like their kid missing out. But if there was some way of coordinating action, whether that's more regulation or some other means, you know, he proposes like parents signing a pledge, then you can get around some of those things, because the consequences are really obviously disastrously bad for young people. And I think parents in every country know that.
All right, we got to take the break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about Australia. There is a thing here about a society that's willing to defend itself must be a society that's willing to defend its children. And that is not American society. That's
we kill our children.
We are a defenseless society now. We don't defend our children. We have abandoned them to all this horror. But good for Australia. We'll talk a little bit more about it when we come back on the other side on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
One of the reasons we should go to Mass is because it is the food of the saints that we receive. And for the saints, they understood rightly that the time after Holy Communion, that those moments are the most precious moments of our lives.
The Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, live from the EWTN Chapel, every morning, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Radio and Television.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Reading from the Reuters report, Sydney, Australia today. Australia moved closer on Wednesday to banning social media for children under 16 after the Parliament's lower house passed a bill, even as Alphabet and Facebook pressed the government to delay the legislation. Who cares what Alphabet and Facebook want? Like, you're a moron if you care what they want in this regard. They're not the friend of your child.
Well, to make it even more extreme, I mean, at least Alphabet, my understanding was they already had an internal policy not to let you create an account if you were under 13. Now, that policy was completely unenforced. And I do wonder how this law is going to work. I don't know enough about the ins and outs of it. Like, how do you make sure kids aren't just clicking that they're 18 or 16 or whatever age, and then moving forward? Seems like you need some kind of verification regime.
Well, that's the game in Australia now is, well, we don't have the verification to do this. I mean, these guys can solve technical problems, yes. 7 days a week and twice on Sundays. But then you give them a technical problem that would limit their access to children, and it's unsolvable.
It's an unsolvable thing. You have to provide evidence of your driver's license.
Yeah, you could
which
have
you all, cannot have
all kinds
16.
Of yeah, yeah. But then there's, of course, the people who say, well, I don't want to have to be verified on the internet and all that. Well, that's fine. My strong feeling about this is adults need to learn this. At some point, we have to be socially responsible, not just whiny, that we get everything we want. And you can whine all you want about, I have a right to this pornography, but it's a disease that's ruining children. So you're going to have a little inconvenience getting your pornography. I'm sorry, but you're going to have a little. It's okay for society to say, it's not our top priority that you get to your fetish videos without any obstacles. All right, that's not priority number one.
Right.
Go ahead, Joe.
Oh, go ahead, Chris.
Well, I was just going to say that this is laudatory. On the other hand, even if it passes, I guess people will look for ways to get around this. The primary responsibility here for protecting minors from all the evils of modern communication technology are mom and dad. And I know Joe made the point that it's difficult or it's a challenge for parents to interfere with the social lives of their children. But we are in a cultural, social, moral crisis like one which we have never seen in history with respect to the malformation of the young. And parents, well, what does Chesterton say? In order to correct the exaggeration, you have to exaggerate the correction. And parents are simply going to have to say, it's uncomfortable for me to tell my kids they're not going to have a smartphone, but I'm going to do that.
But I feel like, okay, so Joe's got little kids. You and I have grown kids.
Yep.
I mean, your youngest is in college, and mine are older than that. I feel like people who have been through it at our age need to tell young parents in some way, sit them down and go, this is worse than you think it is.
But doesn't everybody know this now?
No, so I don't think they do, Chris.
I'm starting to think that people do, and even young people do. Now, maybe it's not a large percentage yet, but I just think of the number of kids who want to just have a dumb phone, or who like to listen to vinyl records, or simply want the pace of their life slowed or recognized, as Joe says, that they're anxious. I think the number of people between, I don't know, 8 and 30 who are starting to recognize the ill effects of all of this media is growing.
I feel more comfortable about them. Like, I think we'll probably see more things like this Australian law in a generation. Like, we're in a weird place with the digital divide, because we've got people who are now adults who've never lived in a world without iPhones. And then we've got people who, you know, the digital revolution came sometime in their childhood. And then you've got people who it came in their adulthood. And for any number of reasons, including like plasticity of the brain, people respond at different developmental stages to things in different ways. Like, you know, I still remember a world before widespread internet. And I was born in 85. Like, it was a big deal when we got...
How did he get on this show? He
was born in... Yeah.
He's so young.
I know. He's back.
And meanwhile, I'm probably above the mean age in office, well, at least the median age in office. Some of you are probably skewing the mean up. But, it's striking. I mean, I go on Facebook. And first of all, I go on Facebook because I'm old enough that that is a thing that I still do. And you've got people sharing AI-generated images, having no idea they're AI-generated, or sharing these insane, like, warnings to Facebook that they're not allowed to do things, as if these are going to be legally applicable warnings. And it's like, okay, the people doing this level of ignorant, basic thing online, the people who think this is how you interact in the digital space, are completely unprepared for the 21st century. And meanwhile, their kids are addicted to devices, and mom and dad are clueless about it. Yeah. Now, this is less true with the younger mom and dad who's also addicted to the devices. But we're dealing with this place where I think people have a completely distorted, in many cases, kind of incoherent vision of what this is, because it's not a world they understand well at all. They're like dimly aware. You know, there's this world of social media, or there's this world of video games, or there's this world of even online pornography. And unless it's something that they've been touched by personally, it's just like a problem out there somewhere. And meanwhile, there's a generation behind them who this is wrecking their lives in major ways. And the older generation has no idea about what the nature of the problem is enough to have any good input about what to do with it.
If you are the parent of a 12-year-old girl and you do not recognize how these things are destroying her life, you're unconscious. I just think you're unconscious. Girls especially.
Well, okay, what about the parent, for example, who is not highly educated in the technological realm?
But
they're a single parent, maybe. They're working all the time. They're stressed themselves. They don't have the bandwidth to keep up with all this. And I'm not saying it's not their responsibility. It most certainly is their responsibility. But it's also society's responsibility.
Agreed. I mean, and as I said, this is laudatory legislation. I hope it's effective.
I hope it's effective, too. I think it's got to be just the beginning. It's got to be. And I hope there's a landslide of it. I just don't understand the idea that we can't say no to corporations. I'm very There's this. It's a
yeah.
Kind
where's
of
the left on this? Aren't they the ones who are supposed to be opposed to evil corporations?
Yeah, and it's but one laudable thing about the Australians is it's both left and right wing. Apparently, at least from the reporting I've read, who are 77% means pretty much everybody's in. Like that 23%.
It'd be very hard to say 3/4 of Australians are conservative. Based on any reasonable
sense so it does seem to run the spectrum of people who know this needs to get done. But
I bet in that remaining quarter, you've got people who are on the libertarian-ish right, as well as people on a kind of libertarian-ish left. I mean, this doesn't seem like the kind of thing that's going to be a left-right issue. I think it's a little more complicated than that.
Yeah,
and so hopefully, I mean, I'd be interested in seeing what the numbers would be in the U.S. if that was proposed as legislation. I just think there's no major industry or special interest group that cares about it enough to maybe do anything about it, unfortunately.
Yeah. The people opposed to this are people who are profiting off the destruction of children. My friend Dan Kerr puts it this way. He says, the effect of all these things is it's outsourcing the imagination of children.
Oh, what a wonderful way to say it.
I'm totally going to steal that clause. Yeah. It's phrase, outsourcing the imagination. And then the other people who would be opposed to this would be demons. I think demons would be opposed.
I don't know what percentage of the Australian population is demons, but I do think it's pretty low at this time. All right.
Well, possessed by demons, maybe.
Oh, well, that's true. That's true. Okay, we got to take a quick break. Right back. More news of the world from a Catholic perspective with the Flannel Panel, Joe Heschmeyer, Chris Check, and me, your host, Cy Kellett, on Catholic Answers Live. We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests. He does on-air debates. And he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to casociety315.com and join today.
From its earliest days, Catholic faith has been lived by a yearly cycle of feasts and seasons. The new book from Mike Aquilina and Adam Lucas, Feasts of Our Fathers, is a one-stop companion for praying and meditating through the holy days and seasons of the church with help from the most ancient Christian people. Don't just read about the early saints, pray with them. Order your copy of Feasts of Our Fathers now at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I have a quick legal notice I need to read. No person at Catholic Answers represents that there are demons voting in Australian elections or that any Australian politicians are demons. And any indication to otherwise is purely fiction. All right. I got a second story for you. I am like The View. I'm reading legal notices now.
I have never seen a single episode of The View.
These are too many deep
I don't think
cuts
I have
for
either.
View viewers that I just don't know if you've read our audience very well.
You're saying that you don't think there's a big overlap between our audience and The View?
In the Venn diagram?
I'm not sure who watches The View, but I feel like they don't also listen to this show. I don't know what they do. But
it's boy, well, really? Well,
maybe they just leave the TV on and it counts as a viewer in some sort of Nielsen rating. But
oh yeah,
yeah, like just right. Dogs left at home who get skittish if the TV's off.
Oh well, if we count as a viewer with just the TV on, then I'm a Turner Classic Movies watcher all night because I forget to turn it off. Okay,
you shouldn't leave your dog at home. But dogs are not meant to be alone.
Why are you saying that to me? I didn't say anything.
No, Joe said people leave their dogs at home with the TV on.
So what are you supposed to do with your
dog? Get a fish. Don't have a dog.
Oh, I see.
Your pet needs a pet?
No, he's not saying get a fish for the dog. He's saying instead of a dog.
Do not be a dog owner if you're not with your dog.
And it's opposite with cats. If it's a cat, don't come in the house. It belongs to the cat. Yeah. Get out. Look, all right?
Exactly. If you have a cat as a pet, that's a different set of problems.
I don't think there is such a thing as having a cat as a pet. You just take on the responsibility of feeding a cat that still considers itself pretty independent. Yeah,
all right. Moving on. Flannel panel. Joe Heschmeyer, Chris Check, and myself. We all wear flannel shirts and talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. And here's some news for the day. Following the recent U.S. election, I don't know if you two were aware, but we had a major election here in the United States recently. Hopefully.
Not sure if we want to touch that one, but go ahead.
The problem with elections is that they just start the next one right away. Could we please? I want to have a constitutional amendment that the Congress just gets elected for 40 years. They can all just stay. I don't care. Do what you want. I'll vote again 40 years.
Diane
Feinstein. No more commercials.
Right?
She was determined
to stay for however many it was.
All right. But one of the reactions to the recent election was young women taking interest in the Korean 4B movement. Do either of you know what this is, the 4B movement?
I know what this is.
I have since learned of it in the last 2 weeks.
Korea is a society in trouble.
I am not taking the 4B.
You can't. It's not. You can't. Anyways, you can't even do all of the Bs.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. Korean women got fed up with getting paid less than men and being generally feeling unappreciated in their society. And so they this was back during the Me Too time here. They had this thing called the 4B thing, and I guess BI, whatever that prefix is in Korean, however you might pronounce
it's negative.
That, it means no.
Yeah.
So and now any parents who have very small children in the car, I don't know where this conversation is going to go, but it's not going to be good. So I'll just tell you right now, I'm just looking at these two. This is not going to be good. So
I mean, because one of the B's involves the relationship
sex.
Of. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Actually, we can say refraining from fornicating.
OK, that's very well said.
I don't think that's how the 4B people phrase it, but. I'm very happy that these women are going to stop fornicating.
Well, that's one of them. No dating, no marriage, no children. That's the one you can't do. You can't bear children anyways. And they say they're withholding these things as a form of protest.
Yeah. This is like the Lysistrata.
Right?
Lysistrata,
yeah, right. That's famous.
Aristophanes.
Yeah.
Although that's a satire, by the way. It's a farce.
I have never read it.
No, he's actually making fun. Aristophanes is making fun of the women. In the Lysistrata.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, no, and nowadays people think, oh, this was a great feminist play. It's not at all. It's a farce.
Oh.
They are the object of mockery in the plot of that play.
Well, let's try not to mock women here.
No, I'm just saying, you feminists who think Aristophanes was a feminist are reading the play incorrectly.
Yes, right.
I'm thinking you're giving them maybe too much credit. I'm assuming they've actually read Aristophanes.
Oh,
but, I mean,
this,
I may be
this
wrong
one
about
does keep reemerging as a kind of a feminist.
They made a movie out of it recently. Like, not, I mean, within the last 10 years.
Lysistrata.
Listerine, I think it's called. And okay,
yeah. So in the play, the women are trying to nobly get their men during the Peloponnesian Wars to stop fighting.
Yeah,
and they decide to withhold the benefits of marriage.
The problem with stopping fighting in the Peloponnesian Wars is the Spartans will just take everything you got if you stop.
Yes.
Like, you know, like the other guy gets some say in that. But
I thought you were going to say the problem with stopping marital relations in ancient Greece is they barely consented to women in the first place.
Well, women wasn't their primary
this
interest.
This is part of the joke, I think.
All right. So, Joe, let me just get your take on
I think that's overstated, by the way.
About the Greeks?
Yeah.
All right.
They did reproduce. They somehow managed to produce another babies. Generation of
they
Greeks.
They did that.
Well, so the funny bit here was that some of these women were shaving their heads to make themselves ugly.
Yeah.
This is by the way, the modern one, not the ancient Greeks.
Right.
This is the modern Korean one.
But then, of course, there is, and I forget the name of it.
Alopecia?
Thank you. And so the victims of this illness were coming online saying, oh, so people who have this alopecia, we're ugly.
We're ugly now.
So, yeah,
some,
so people,
of, some of them have husbands who will slap you on stage.
Yeah. Oh, come on, man. Do we always have to pick on Will Smith? Do we always have to go back to picking on Will Smith? But why don't you just keep Will Smith's name out of your mouth?
But
all right?
I like that you censored it for the radio.
But the news that if you're afraid, you're not going to be able to get an abortion, which, by the way, I don't know why anyone is concerned about this.
About not being able to get an abortion?
Surely there are some states who have...
I wish it was not just a fear-mongering thing. I mean, I wish that there was a real reason people who love abortion were worried.
Yeah, but
unfortunately, I think that we don't have a realistic chance of that happening right now.
Yeah. But if you're refraining from fornicating to not have a baby... I'm with you.
That's actually the way you're supposed to do that. That's the correct way to not have a baby.
Can we say Catholic Answers endorses refraining from fornicating?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. If you're in a place where you cannot consent to marriage and children, then you probably shouldn't be sleeping around or getting married or having babies. That's three of the four B's. Yeah. The only one that leaves is dating, and dating's a discernment for the other three. So.
And by the way,
accept these terms.
I think dating here means sleeping around.
I don't know if that's what it is. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I don't even know how people. I don't think people date the way they did when I was young. Certainly not as badly as I did.
That was carbon dating back then.
But, yeah. all right, Joe. That's not funny, and nobody likes you.
1985.
All right, but this thing though, underneath all of this. Isn't there the kind of perception of something real that women have abandoned their power by becoming men's peers sexually rather than – do you see what I'm saying, Joe? That
yes. I would like to jump in and give two recommendations, if I may. One is a very recent one. Mary Harrington, speaking into this directly, has an article called 4B is Magnificently Reactionary.
Yep.
Yeah.
And which she basically argues, this is a sane and appropriate response. And rather than making fun of these women, we should be recognizing, this is
good point.
This is a healthy way adults interact.
She is having a good laugh at their expense in that piece, which I recommend. It's very funny.
The other one is a much older piece. It's from 2009. It's August 2009 First Things article by a law professor from Villa Prezzo by the name of Richard Stiff. And the article is called Her Choice, Her Problem. And it's fascinating because it delves into the sexual and marital dynamics in almost an economic framework. And so the argument was, in the days before abortion and the pill, the creation of a child out of wedlock was viewed as the responsibility of both of the consenting partners. And so it was a matter of course that you would at least offer marriage if you were dating a young woman and you impregnated her. And then after the pill and after abortion arrive on the scene, these are things that only the woman has the ability to choose. And so the bringing of a new child into the world was now viewed entirely as her choice and thus her problem, hence the title. And so one of the things we can document very easily is that the rates of shotgun weddings go all the way down. Now, that is a mixed blessing, right? This is not the ideal circumstances in which to create a marriage.
But it is most of human history, though, Joe. I mean, the fact is most families are created throughout the history of the world because some obligation was incurred by someone along. Not just because somebody fell in love with somebody and the moon shone more brightly in their eyes. It's because something happened.
It wasn't always amore, right?
Yes.
And in fact, those marriages have a terribly high divorce rate because it turns out, the moon cycle changes. So, if you're waxing and waning with the lunar cycle, that's not the healthiest foundation upon which to build either. So, yeah, Stith makes this point, and I actually built on this in some work I did in law school and looked at the effects of Roe v. Wade, because you have, I believe it was 13 states plus the District of Columbia that were early adopter states for legalized abortion. They legalized abortion prior to Roe, and then the other, 37 states had it imposed on them by Roe v. Wade. And you can see changes in sexual practice. You can see changes in things like the STD rate and all of these things in the early adopter states. There's this explosion in sexually transmitted disease. And then after Roe, you see this explosion spread to the other states. And it's like, oh, it turns out humans aren't just animals. They are adjusting their behavior based on, you know, their understanding
social
of what the consequences are going to be.
Yeah.
Like, if you know fornicating will mean that you're going to have a child and you can't just abort the child, you're more likely to be sexually responsible. This is an absolute win. And it's actually a bit disheartening that more, you know, so-called pro-choicers don't realize, like, you know, this is, you know, we are not talking about lab rats here. We're not talking about monkeys who have no control over their impulses. There is human agency here, and people do adjust their behavior accordingly. Now, I think we can still have a conversation on the legality of abortion in all of those cases, but if they don't see that there is an obvious good to not having massive rates of contraception and hookup culture and STDs and out-of-wedlock pregnancy, like, those are such obvious social ills that if we can't even agree on that, it's very hard to have a good foundation to say what the law ought to be, or what like a healthy society would do to handle any of these problems.
Would you agree with this, that if people weren't so intensely interested in sex, in the act of sex, then the blinders would come off and you could just say the sexual revolution is a total disaster. The only reason people won't admit it's a total disaster is because there's an intense motivation to not admit it.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of things that kind of go into that. But when you look at the results of the sexual revolution,
it's awful.
When you look at it, yeah, the effects on children, the number of children born in broken homes, and the demonstrable, available right there in the statistics kind of data. I mean, Mark Regnerus in the University of South Carolina,
he's great.
He was pretty famous for compiling a lot of this data.
I thought he was
just
in
Texas.
He's
now?
A UT.
Oh, maybe it was.
Yeah,
it's been years since
UT Austin.
Oh, okay, maybe so. But you know, just looking at what are the rates of gang affiliation? What are the income patterns of the family? What are all of these? We know all of this stuff. This is not rocket science. The idea that having a stable and healthy family is the best thing for literally every member of that family is plain as day, and yet we pretend not to know that so people can have the fleeting pleasure of hooking up, which, by the way, turns out not to be very pleasurable over the long term.
Yeah. All right. Well, I tell you, we've got to take a break. I want to continue. We'll talk a little bit more about that before we move on to other stories. One of them coming from Texas, as a matter of fact. Let's wrap up the conversation about the 4B movement. When we come back, I want to share with you what my wife said about it. I thought she had an interesting take, one that made me feel better about myself as a human being. We'll share that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
EWTN Radio posts 11 podcasts every weekday and over 60 per week. They're the perfect companion for busy Catholics everywhere. With on-demand access to audio, you can pause and pick up right where you left off anytime, anywhere. And they're all free. Subscribe by going to EWTNradio.net, then click on podcasts. They're waiting for you. EWTN is the global Catholic network.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Keeping score of how the show is going so far. So far, the big winner for the show is Australia. The big loser is the 4B movement. The show is early.
Say take the win.
Take the win.
4B.
4B.
I think it's great that you're going to stop fornicating and reduce abortions. I think the abortion industry doesn't like the 4B movement.
No. But what a sick. You have to perpetuate
the
sickness in order to keep making the money.
Yeah.
I read this to my wife one morning. I said, have you heard about this 4B movement? And then I read her a little bit. And she goes, that's not a very pro-woman movement. And I said, why not? And she goes, women like men.
Yes.
And I was like, well, I feel better about everything right now. I think that is a basic insight that one of the things that we can easily fall into when we discuss any of these kinds of gender, sex issues is the basic thing that the world is not fundamentally divided down the middle between men and women. It's united. We like each other. We want to be around one
another. Yeah, but can I say there is a kind of a glimmer of observation of the truth in the 4B ladies in noting that the problem is men. They don't really really understand what the problem is, that they've been used. Abortion benefits men.
That's one of the major points Stith makes in that piece I mentioned earlier.
Yeah,
I
mean, abortion completely benefits men. The sexual revolution, you can...
It's all about protecting men from consequences.
Sure.
Is what it is.
100%, 100%. So women do sense, these 4B women, they do sense, okay, we've been used. Now, they're not understanding exactly. Men are making other bad decisions, meaning I can't, fornicate at will. But I think the church here, bishops, priests, Catholic Answers, I think we would do well, and I think abortions would decrease if we could make it very, very clear that men are culpable. I think most abortions would not take place if there wasn't a dad or a boyfriend driving the girl to the abortuary.
Well, I mean, you see that in the numbers as well. When women are asked about why they get abortions,
my dad.
Like if your daughter comes to you pregnant as a father,
you say,
there's a million things for you to do. None of them are encourage her in any way to kill your grandchild.
Yeah, daughter, I've got your back. This is going to be a little bit difficult.
These things happen.
Yep. And
this is part of life.
And we're here with you through it all.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Now let's go, visit the prenatal doctor or whatever.
Right, right. Yeah. And there's nothing you can do to ever make me stop loving you and caring for you.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
But no, I'll drive you, I'll pay for it, and I'm going to go get something to eat and I'll come back and get you.
And if you don't do that, there's just no other way to say this. You're a bad father. If you do any of this abortion stuff,
woe betide you when you stand before our Lord
like
to
that's
be judged.
Not your, that's the opposite of your job, to encourage your daughter to engage in in murder.
And by just think of this in terms of a pagan sense of morality. You're killing your offspring, whether it's your grandchild or that which you have sired.
Right. Right.
That's really bad. That's a very bad thing to do.
Yeah. And if right, and it's like the boyfriend who's like, whatever you want to do, I'll support you. That's so knock it off, you moron. That's not how you talk to it. You say, I this is my responsibility as much as it is yours. This is what I want to happen. You don't sit there. I'll support you, whatever. That's a way of saying, I'm hoping you'll get rid of the kid. But
You might think me old fashioned for this, but I think the man has more responsibility
than the woman.
Yeah. Yep.
I do think you old
in terms of abortion.
I think it depends
on case by case.
Yeah, it would perhaps. I would say just generally. Men are supposed to be leaders in society. They are supposed to be heads of households. They're not supposed to seduce women. And the culpability, this is my gut, and you're going to call me old-fashioned, is greater.
Huh.
Yep.
Yep. I think we have a dual abandonment of, for one, traditional gender roles, and two, a sense of what it is to be a grown-up. And I think, I talk to enough young men who complain about not being able to find women who want a man who is what you just described.
Yes.
And I hear from a lot of young women about not being able to find a man who is as you described. Yeah. And so partly, I think we just have a culture that doesn't know what men or women are or what they're about or what their roles are. And they're unhappy with that, but they don't really have a solution to it. Yeah. Like, I don't think anyone is. I've not met anyone who's like, I think things are going great with young men and women. I think the relationship between the sexes is really good and healthy right now. I'm glad there's radical feminists and men's rights activists who loathe one another. Like, I think that's really good. I don't hear that at all. What I hear is a lot of brokenness and a lot of, like, resentment to anyone who suggests men and women are made for each other and we can actually be happy with each other, but we need to be grown-ups about it. And we need to have certain reasonable expectations and responsibilities towards one another.
Totally agree with everything Joe is saying here, but I think that the bulk of the rhetoric we get, you know, even on on the pro-life side, does focus on, in fact, I think you might have even said it today, Si, sort of the power of women, or which is you were describing these 4B people. But the pro-life side uses this too. It goes all the way back to, you know, like Maggie Gallagher and George Gilder and these folks, and women are the civilizing element of society. And I am not denying that they do bring a certain kind of civility to society. But it's in St. Paul, and men are supposed to take the leadership role. And because they have failed to, babies are dying. And this is not something that you hear even in pro-life sermons.
Go ahead.
I'm going to push back on that a little bit. I think there's truth to that for sure. I guess I had a conversation with a priest not long ago where he made the observation that every Mother's Day homily seemed like it was women are so great and every Father's Day homily was guys get it together. And that he thought there was something really unhealthy.
There is.
In having that constant kind of approach that we often, I think, in the pro-life movement kind of infantilize women and sort of want to pretend like they're just victims. And there is a real sense of victimhood. Women are more relational. And so it's easier to pressure them into abortions they don't want. But they are still saying yes to this. And they are adults. Most of these
not
cases.
Not always, but yeah.
Who, right. And so I think it's fair to say there's a dual failure. I don't think we need to demonize women at all. But I think we can recognize them as consenting adults in the cases where they're consenting adults.
Would you agree with me, Joe, however, that men, and here even by the pro-life movement and by the church, have not been held sufficiently accountable for their culpability in abortions?
Yes, probably partly because they are often not there at the moment of the abortion. Which is actually itself like.
I think typically they are. They're driving. They're paying. They're writing the check or swiping their card or.
Well, I mean, sometimes we know this for a fact. The abortion industry does not want to talk about this, but the rapist is taking the rape victim to the abortion clinic. Yeah. This is the reality. This is the gross, ugly reality of what's happening. I do think that
in 2016, Luke Skywalker's son, his girlfriend, was pregnant. And he and his wife pressured her to get an abortion, and she didn't. And she sued the son, who's a 37-year-old man, by the way, who is still like not married and is like trying to pressure his girlfriend into getting an abortion. It's like, you're Mark Hamill, like you've got Hollywood money. Why could you not afford a grandchild? Like it's crazy to me that you would think that the solution to that is abortion. Yeah. But this became an international news article.
Yeah.
And I have to imagine if it was the shoe is on the other foot, where it's like the woman's family saying you should really get an abortion, that doesn't become an international news scandal in any of the same way. Right. So I do think people are disgusted with men in their roles in pushing for abortion, probably more than they're disgusted with women who decide that they want to have abortion.
Well, let me just throw something out for you just to be cheery as we close this hour, and then we'll get on another topic next hour. If we don't convince young men and women to marry and have children, our society is going to die, because you cannot, at a less than one replacement rate, survive more than two or three generations as a society. Like, you're done. It's not like, oh, there's fewer people than, no, you're done as a society. You're at the current replacement rate in South Korea, we're two generations away from there being no South Koreans. They'll be gone. So yeah. I think a fundamental deep question is, how are we going to construct the world or reconstruct the world or mitigate whatever we've done so that young people will be once again enthusiastic about being moms and dads?
I think
if you want a silver lining here, the birth rate of traditional Catholics is 3.6, according to the economist Philip Pilkington. And one of the reasons early Christians took over the Roman Empire was that the Romans were killing their children. And the Christians were having children. Yeah.
All right. Well, that takes care of the first hour. We got some wonderful, fascinating stories in the next hour, including a discussion of Martin Scorsese's latest project, the big Jubilee year that's happening next year and nobody seems to know about. We'll talk about Bibles in Texas schools with Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers, with Joe Heschmeyer, apologist, author, father, lawyer, former seminarian, and so many other things, including raconteur, and me, your host, Cy Kellett, right after this on Catholic Answers Live.